Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. We had a tremendous week this week. We continue to pound the NAACP. And this is what I want the people to know. I understand that you want to give the NAACP a free pass, just like you give everybody else. But we're not going to give the NAACP a free pass. We're going to either make them put up or shut up. And I understand smart people, intelligent people, talk about world events. Average people talk about their jobs. Dumb people talk about each other. Yet and still, we give the NAACP a free pass. Let me read something briefly that we just put on the internet. It says the NAACP have chosen Ben Jealous as his new president. After a contentious debate that lasted long into the night, the members of his board director said Ben Jealous, who is the youngest president in the NAACP history. In 2008, Ben Jealous was the only finalist president or presented by the search committee to the full board for consideration. Some board members wanted to hear from two others whom the search committee identified as finalists, but Ben Jealous supporters, who actually did it, prevented, sources said. When the vote turned out to be 34-21, and they made the announcement, no one clapped, no one celebrated, not one single person. One board member said after the meeting in Baltimore, Maryland, it looked like the way the communist country hold elections, only letting one person run. This is the NAACP as we know it today. Ben Jealous has unfortunately tarnished the already fragile reputation of the NAACP by allowing his work for the president and the corporations, and let me repeat that, the corporations, to overrun the interests of the African-American people. The NAACP are sellouts and out of touch with the black community. As corruption rolls on, the NAACP is a true sellout and out of touch with the community. We're asking 200,000 members to burn your membership card. Burn, baby, burn. We now have a total of 2,698 membership cards burned. Our goal is to get that 200,000. The NAACP Image Awards, February 1st, 2013, in Los Angeles, California. We, the people, will be there to protest. So make your reservations. Make sure you're there. Make sure you take this thing to a whole different level. Make sure you do the things that need to be done so that you can be there. And let's continue our fight with the NAACP and the rest of these organizations who do not support the black community or doing the things they're doing, like Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Now let's listen to a little Martin Luther King.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "Thy Country Tears of Thee." Sweet land of liberty, I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heights of Allegheny, Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the mountains of Florida, let freedom ring. From the deserts of Florida, California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and mole hill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, I have another exciting show for you today. I have my very, very good friend, attorney from Detroit, Vanessa Flupner. She is someone special. I love her, and I want you to know that she's coming on here to bring you some information. I know we're not used to getting information. I know how we do. But listen, let's get a chance to welcome my friend, Vanessa Flupner. Vanessa Flupner, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me, Reverend Pinckney. How are you today?
Great, great. It's my pleasure to have you anytime. Matter of fact, you also spoke at our dinner, and I tell you, we really was excited just listening you talk.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being there.
Absolutely. Listen, tell us a little bit about what's going on, and tell us what we can do to help, and also just take us to where we should be.
All right, I'll do this as briefly as I can, which is difficult. The issue I'm talking about is foreclosures. Most people, if they haven't experienced this, they definitely know someone in their community or someone in their family that has gone through a foreclosure. What they may not know is that the majority of these foreclosures are done illegally, These financial lenders are not working with borrowers to place them in modifications, which they received billions of dollars of the government from the government to do, our tax dollars, I might add. And more importantly, what most people really don't know is that after the big $700 billion bailout, the majority of loans, approximately 75% of them, were turned around and were underwritten and insured by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who was taken over by the government. That means, once again, it's our tax dollars. So what does that mean in layman's terms? The majority of the evictions that are going on now are being done by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That means we are literally foreclosing on our neighbors with our tax dollars. And this is without giving people an opportunity to take advantage of modifications and other options that can help them to stay in their homes. And people are just silently, like lambs being led to slaughter, losing their homes, and people from lack of knowledge are not fighting against this injustice.
Wow.
I think it's very important that people are aware of this.
Absolutely. And you know, there's also, you know, right now we got Bank of America and Wells Fargo and, you know, all these other banks that, you know, I'm very concerned about also. Especially Bank of America, they're one of the worst predator lenders that there is.
Yes, Bank of America is at the top of the list, along with Chase and Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank and City Mortgage. That's your top five cast of characters. And as you indicated, Bank of America, who received the most significant amount for modifications from the federal government to the tune of $7 billion, is consistently foreclosing on individuals and tossing them out in the street, and no one's eligible for a modification. Either you didn't send in enough documentation, you don't have enough income, you have too little income. It's always an issue. But yet and still, they have no problem collecting the federal tax dollars when they foreclose on you, in addition to the modification tax dollars from the $7 billion. At some point, people have got to say, look, this is not right. This is an injustice, and it's not something that can simply be won through the legal system. Many times people think, well, you're an attorney, you can go get my house back. It's not that system. And, you know, it's not that simple. Our system is not conducive to the borrower. The judicial system is, by and large, biased toward the lenders and the banks. So it's not a simple process, and it's not an easy process. In fact, it's a big fight when you're struggling in litigation to do this. But by people taking collective action, people need to start getting involved, start researching this issue. There's many organizations that are involved with this, People Before Banks, Moratorium Now, various Occupy movements that have taken a lead role in trying to bring the community together to address this issue and bring out information so people understand it. And if necessary, protest, picket, do what you have to do to make these banks aware that we understand that what's going on is an injustice. We understand that people didn't just wake up one day and say, guess what, I'm not going to pay my mortgage, I'll be the homeless. In fact, based on some Federal Reserve statistics, they estimate between 2007 and 2011, 10.9 million people were foreclosed on in this country. 10 million people didn't say, I didn't want to pay my mortgage. 10 million people didn't say, I don't want my house anymore. Just the sheer volume of foreclosures should show that there is a flaw in the system, and it's going to take the people coming together collectively to address this issue and to right this injustice.
Wow, that's, you know what? And, you know, like one of the things I know that's been going on in Detroit, when they foreclose on some people, when they move them out, that the that they will come in and move the people back in. And I think that go ahead.
There have been some community groups that do that. But our whole position is, before it even gets to that point, why should people be forced to leave their home based on a potentially predatory or illegal foreclosure? They should never have to leave their home. And that's why people have got to stand up and let the financial institutions know, we're not just going to tolerate this. We will do whatever's necessary, be it do protests, be it removing finances from these financial institutions. I mean, you're using your own money to throw you out on the street.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, listen, you got about 90 seconds to say whatever you want. Tell the people what they can do, and then I'm going to bring on Mike.
Okay. What you can do, first of all, educate yourselves. I'm going to give you two quick web links that you can go to that explains the foreclosure process in Michigan and some of the actions that are being taken. One is www.peoplebeforebanks.org. That's www.peoplebeforebanks.org. The other is Moratorium Now, and their website is www.moratoriummi.org. Moratorium-mi.org. And if you go to these sites, it will give you a lot of information. It will tell you about various struggles of people that are right now fighting foreclosure, from 84-year-old paralyzed senior citizens to families with ill children who all they want is just a reasonable payment. These type of things will be there for you, as well as the legal basis behind foreclosures and an explanation of how the foreclosure process works in Michigan.
Hey, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Vanessa, listen, I want you to hang in for a little while, and I'm going to give you another couple of minutes to say what you want at the closer to the end of the show. But just stay with us, and I'm going to bring on Mike. Mike, are you there?
Good evening, Reverend Pinckney. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I wanted to bring a little bit of advice on how to fight foreclosures. After the families go into court, and a lot of times, as Vanessa pointed out, the courts are bought and paid for by the bank. They find that there's not much recourse left. And what we do is we urge people to start doing mass actions, like demonstrations at banks, demonstrations at their homes. And in this regard, we have a case coming up in Coldwater, Michigan. It's a family of the Murrays. They're facing eviction. And their hearing is on Friday, November 30th. And we're urging all people who are concerned and want to help stop foreclosures to show up in the courtroom on 31 Division Street in Coldwater, Michigan. That's, again, this Friday, 2 o'clock at the Branch County District Court in Coldwater, Michigan. We find that after you've exhausted, your day in court and the banks continue to threaten to evict you, we need to take what we found is we've got to take a page from the civil rights movement, from the other movements where we've asserted our rights as a people in this country. And we found that what you need to do is hit the streets. And every time we've done this, I wouldn't say every time, but many times when we've done this, when we've shown the bank that we mean business in stopping a foreclosure and an eviction, they come back to the bargaining table and negotiate with the family. In the case of the Murrays, they have put $35,000 into an escrow account with the Bank of America while they were attempting a loan modification. Bank of America has rejected their loan modification application, but still kept their $35,000 and now wants to throw the family out on the street. And we say enough is enough. We need to put a stop to this. We urge people to show up, if they can, in Coldwater, Michigan, this Friday at 2 o'clock, and let's keep the Murrays in their home.
Well, you know one thing, Mike? I am going to try to be there. I'm going to do everything within my power to be there. I know it's about maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours from my home, at least 2 hours, but I'm going to try to drive there on Friday morning. My wife and myself, we will hit on and maybe bring a few people with us just to show support. And I know for many years, Mike, you have supported the people here in Benton Harbor, you and Vanessa. I mean, you even when it went feasible, I'd be back in 2003. I mean, you know, people have stood up for us. That's incredible. I'm going to give you my word that we're going to try to do everything we can to be in Coldwater Friday morning.
So well, I appreciate that, Reverend.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So I plan, like I said, to at least, give it my best effort to be there. I do have a speaking engagement that same day, but it's at a later time. But I'm going to do everything within my power to make sure that we're there, and I'm going to spread the word. You sent me an email just recently. I'm going to send the email out to my 5,000 people that's on my email list, and maybe we can get a crowd there.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely. How
we're going to save the Murray's home.
Okay, well, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that we at least put forth a good effort, a great effort, and show the people what we're capable of doing. And on that note,
People United.
Go ahead.
I said the people united will never be defeated.
That's right.
We have to take this to all the struggles and build unity across the country as we fight the banks and the powers that be.
Absolutely. You are 100% correct. Well, Mike, listen, you got about 30 seconds to say whatever you want. Say whatever you want, and I want you to hang in. I'm going to let you have some final words. Go right ahead.
Well, I urge people that are that like to do this to go on Facebook, spread the word. You can get the information on the case at the moratorium website, moratorium-mi.org. Grab the information, though. Make it go viral on Facebook. We need to do that. Send it to your friends in Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids, Benton Harbor, other cities and towns throughout southwest Michigan. We need to get as many people there as possible.
Oh, well, okay. Well, we're going to do all we can to make sure people come up, show up, and show out. That's the word we're going to. We want people to show up and show out. We will make sure that we get some folks there, and we'll see what happens. And on that note, I got to bring on Mr. Victor. Mr. Victor, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you doing today, Rev. Pick?
Great. I'm doing great. How's everything?
Glory to God. We're moving on.
You're moving on, huh?
Goal of victory. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. How's your wife doing?
Hello?
She's hanging in there?
I thought she was there.
Oh, okay. Anyway, Mr.
No,
Victor,
let me
say this before you go on. Like I told you, I spoke with the judge in reference to your case, and also what I'm trying to do is find an attorney that will look at your case. Why don't you tell the people a little bit more about your case? Because we have more listeners on the line today, and from all over the world, I've been getting a little like emails. People want to know more. They want to know more how they can help you. So you need to tell the people how they can help you. Start off what happened, and so they can get an idea of what they're getting into. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Like I said,
you're in jail right now. Is that correct?
I'm in jail right now, presently.
You and your wife.
Me and my wife.
Yes.
And what they're doing is everything unconstitutional, civil rights violation, and even human rights violation to try to manufacture a wrongful conviction. Our child died, and they're trying to create a civil war as if they're defending our child against us. And then separating, dismantle all of our family, which we had 13 sons. And then after dismantling our children, taking our children, putting them up for adoption, and we never even been to trial, charges was murder with no cause of death, and the cause of death is undetermined. Our child had asthma, and he was disciplined on that day, but there was nothing physically challenging as far as fatal that would cause anything fatal. But our child did have asthma. And they neglect to reveal that. They told the public that he had no pre-medical condition, which was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the charges was first-degree murder with no cause of death. They indicted us with first-degree murder with no investigation at all. Arrest us at the hospital. Arrest me at the hospital and charged me with no investigation, no cause of death. And then after they say they failed to prove in a preliminary examination, they gave me the highest bond ever in the history of this area, with no criminal record, and not even as much as a traffic ticket on a failure to prove judgment, which is irrational and just unreasonable. We paid over 8 different bonds, had a failure to prove, 2 quash indictments and a dismissal, and a recusal of the DA office for unclean hands, with a 3rd indictment while we was kept in jail with bonds paid. Paid over 8 bonds, and this time, right now, it's totaling over $3.9 million. That's after a reduction of over $5 million. And went to court over 100 times before the judges in the same district court, the 40th Judicial District, over 100 proceedings without dishonor. and then they held us in jail with bonds paid and made the bonds 3 times higher after dismissal, and then they reindict with the same charges. We already out on bond and put us back in jail with bond paid. Okay, and so, you know, in addition to that, they trying to use the detectives to impute themselves into the case to make themselves a witness to their own indictment, which there is no such thing. Now they're trying to separate myself and my wife by force, by denying us right to counsel, right to self-representation, right to bail, right to speedy trial, excessive bonds and fine, cruel and unusual punishment, no right to a jury while they're taking our children. They're taking our possession. They took over 3 point something million of property, $25 million project that we were doing, praise place. The Lord had given us a vision. We're doing over 120 homes plus a commercial development that was projected to do $7.2 million a year in our community, that would employ more than 80 to 86 employees with over 20 businesses. And also Pro Athletes was investing also so we can increase the value of that community, our community, and property values all the way around, and participate in economic development for our community. We were homeschooling all our children, which they didn't have an opportunity to miseducate them. And they have invaded our sovereignty, and they're trying to commit to cause a civil war between me and my wife, which they're terminating her. They're trying to take away her testimony. Well, she, as being a witness on my behalf, they're trying to make her a victim by force, trying to make her say she abused. She's not. My children was privileged. My wife was privileged. And this is just sick and it's awful. Inhumane. They're doing me every horrible, sick thing they can do to a human being. Put me in jail with super maximum security, no or little human contact, no outside for months. Came to see the sunlight, no mattress, on iron beds with freezing temperature. They're doing everything to cause mental anguish, alienation of affection, put my wife in a hole if she just wave or look at me. They're trying to alienate the affection between us, and we haven't seen our children. You know, we don't know where they're at. Our son was one, Ian, and was three, and Gilbert was one. We haven't seen them in almost 5 years. They put them up for adoption, like I said, and we haven't even been to trial. And it's just ongoing. It's blatant. It's in the front of professional witnesses, and nobody's doing anything. And as far as what can be done to help us, basically it's like old school say, put your money where your mouth at. We are full of knowledge, but resources is what we need. And I've always had a vision about an African-American treasury for what they've done to us down here in New Orleans with Katrina. They were pouring African-Americans back into the water that was trying to get saved from the flood. And by gunpoint, pushing them back in the water. And they drew their lines, and they're saying white on this side and black on that side. And they were actually calling us refugees and foreigners and as aliens. And we are native-born citizens to the state of Louisiana and to the United States of America. The United States government is failing in protecting its citizenship in the state of Louisiana. All of our federal rights are taken. There's no acknowledgement of the Constitution whatsoever, and we are ignored as human beings and as deserving any right in the courts of this land.
Wow. Mr. Victor, is anything, do you have an address where you would like somebody to send some kind of financial help to you? Can you give
yes,
us an address and take your time and tell us about it so we can get it on record so people can start sending you money?
Well, yes, sir. We need a defense fund. We got more than enough. If they send it, we got me and my wife. We've done in our ministry. We have a CD cassette that would bless the family tremendously. The Learning of God is on it. If they send $10, we will send the CDs. And like I said, we can get even 10,000 people to do that at $10. You can do the math. That's $100,000 we can pay for. The professional help we need outside the state of Louisiana that will come in and stop all of this treason that they're doing and conspiracy. They're in concert with violating the laws of the land and the laws of the state, and it's racketeering. It's a RICO, what they're doing together. It's scheming. It's racketeering. It's a conspiracy in the efforts in the courts in the state of Louisiana.
Mr. Victor, let me say this before you go on. You and your wife have been in jail about 4 years. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, ongoing for now. Over this case is almost 5 years old, and ongoing back and forth over 4 years. Yes, sir.
Okay, and also you definitely looking for an attorney, someone who will defend you, because at this time you don't have an attorney. Is that correct?
Well, see, defense would be easy because the widow evidence is with us in every regard, but they're deliberately trying not to defend, and the defense attorneys is part of the scheme. So it's obvious, it's in the face. So we need somebody to have the righteousness of God to come in here and make them uphold the law, which is all we ask them to do. If they would uphold the law and stop being unlawful themselves, it would be no such case existing. But what I'm saying, the P.O. box, I want to take my time, is P.O. box 342. P.O. box 342, Reserve, R-E-S-E-R-V-E, Louisiana, 70084, Defense Fund, Victor's Defense Fund, in care of Marcus Victor. In care of Marcus Victor, that's our son. He's a prince. But it's a Victor's Defense Fund, P.O. Box 342, Reserve, Louisiana, 70084. And not only that, Mrs. Empress, who is over the Million Women March, if you got that kind of number of people that would support even the CDs that we put out, a million at $10, it's $10 million. I'm not just talking about a defense for the victors. I think we need an African-American treasury so that where visions and dreams are, you need support, and dreams die for lack of support. And
absolutely,
we have to prioritize the seriousness of all these different things that we know that they're doing against us as a community, genocidal things that they're doing, but we need resources. We need to consolidate a treasury where we can come in and be a refuge in these different cases and scenarios all across the country where our people are being misused. In the case of Katrina, in the case of the young lady that was on earlier with the banks, we need to have a treasury of our own, an African-American treasury where we can do for self, and we can have the resources, not only the knowledge. I think we're full of knowledge, but we got to put our money where our mouth is.
Mr. Victor, it's that time. It's 5:30 right now. It's time to burn our NAACP cards. We're going to take about 90 seconds, and I'm going to bring you on back on at the end of the show and let you talk as long as you wish so people
Glory
can get
God.
Message on what they need to do. But right now, it's burn, baby, burn. It's time to burn your NAACP card. Anytime you hear Tracy Chapman, you know it's that time. So we're going to pause for about 90 seconds, and we'll be back in 90 seconds, and then we'll take it to the next level. Hold on, everybody. Please don't leave yet.
Love.
Talking about a revolution.
talking about a revolution. We should be talking about a revolution. In Delaware, the state of Delaware, would you believe that they're hanging black folks today? Absolutely. And nobody is taking a stand. But one of the professors from a black college stood up, and when he stood up and protested the hanging of black folks, they fired him. Professor, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line. Yes, sir. Thank you, Reverend Pinky.
Hey, Professor, tell us the story so people can know, and then I want you to tell people what they can do to help afterwards. That's the most important thing. We can tell the story, but we don't tell people what they can do to help.
Yes. Well, what happened, and I'll try to be brief. I began investigating. There was a flyer put out in the black community in February of 2012. But I understand now that the flyer actually was originated much earlier than that, maybe during the summer of 2011. But it was in February where someone in the community brought the flyer to my office while I was having office hours, and they told me that I should come and help them to investigate it. I went into the black community, and I found out that this particular flyer had circulated throughout downtown Dover, where there's a large African-American population. Immediately, I decided that I would start lecturing on lynchings at Delaware State University, which I did. I used the time period of the Emmett Till story to really bring in this flyer and start telling the students about lynchings. And the students decided to have a rally to warn other students that there are potentially white supremacist groups in the area, basically saying that they were going to lynch people. The flyer reads, "Cleaning up our streets one nigger at a time with a black man hanging from a tree." It's a graphic design. And when I the students had a rally, we decided to, the university police told the students that they couldn't do it. We called the ACLU. The ACLU said that that was against their constitutional rights for the university to block them from passing out flyers and peacefully talking to their peers. The students made a decision that they would have another rally at the university board of trustee meeting the next day. We talked to the ACLU. They said that they saw that, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. To make a long story short, I supported the students, and I was arrested on March the 1st, 2012, and trumped-up charges were put on me, and I was put in jail, forced in jail to sign documents saying that I will, if I return to the university, I will be arrested. And so I was later fired. Well, while walking at a park, while I was off of work, originally they just suspended me from March to August, but during the month of May, I was at this park. I would go to this park about two times a day, five times a week with my children, and I would walk around the park. On May the 11th, a young man was found hanging up on a tree in the park where I frequent with my family. It later turns out that this young man was my former barber. He used to cut my hair, or he cut my hair a few times at the barber shop where I went. And I started to investigate as a member of the NAACP. I called the local NAACP and the state NAACP. They refused to help. I began to investigate myself. Many of the people in the community said that this young man would never hang himself on a tree during the broad daylight. It was around 6 o'clock in the evening. This is before daylight saving. And I pushed it, and the family wanted to go public, but eventually most of the family young men were later arrested and put in jail, and so they kind of quashed it. And then a few months later, another young man said that there was an attempt at lynching on his life before he called the ambulance. Some people saw and heard some white guys trying to kill him. They put a belt around his neck. And the first young man that was hung on a tree, who they found hanging on a tree in May, they said he did it with his own belt. The second guy, these same guys tried to do the same thing to him. They tried to cut off his ear. They tried to cut off his penis. He started screaming for his life. He fought him. And a white family saw him screaming and yelling. They called the police. And the men drove off. Nothing was done. There was no proper investigation. Even with the first guy, the state police, the Dover police ruled it a suicide. The second guy, they said, oh, since he was in the streets, that, you know, he was probably out there doing something wrong. So they really didn't investigate it. I later found out when there was a group called War on the Horizon. You can Google them, waronthehorizon.com. They came down to do an investigative story on it, and they put out some documentaries on it, which you can go online and see those videos. I later found out one day, 2 days after the videos came out, a family from New Jersey called me and told me that they believed that their son, who was 19 years old at the time in 2010, he was at a college here in Dover, and he was found hanging from a tree with his belt right outside the college. And War on the Horizon, they went up and interviewed them on that. You can go to WOH Report on YouTube, and you'll see the new videos on that of the family being interviewed about how they felt that their son was did not die of suicide, in which the Delaware Dover police said was a suicide. I later found out there had been a rash of lynchings or black men allegedly hanging themselves all over the country on trees or in the basements, in which many families are now reporting that this is not the case. I've been contacted about these issues. Myself, I'm facing more than 2 years in jail. I'm being prosecuted by the vice president's son, who is Mr. Bo Biden, who's the attorney general. He refuses to drop the charges, although I have witnesses and videos that show that I did not hit an officer, nor did I resist arrest, nor did I cause a riot. But they're prosecuting me, I think, because I was writing about how black colleges are turning white, and I was investigating these lynchings. I believe that it's all tied. I go to court on December the 4th for two motion hearings, and then later we will have a trial probably sometime in early January. Not having a job now, it's been extremely difficult on my family to go from basically a middle-class income to basically unemployment and food stamps for simply trying to investigate lynchings and teaching young black kids the strategies of the civil rights movement and teaching them their constitutional rights. They had every right to be out there that day, the day before the major protest and the day of the protest where I was arrested. But you're dealing with a lot of white supremacy, obviously on the local level, but also in the state government.
Yeah.
And so this is the issue. If anybody wants to help me with my legal defense fund, I know there was another young man who had called. I just really feel bad because we're not organized to deal with all these issues that we are confronted with in this country, and without our organization that's willing to take this on, I think we're just going to see more tragedies like myself, like the young men who were hanging on the trees, and the brother in Louisiana, he and his wife. We're just not organized.
Yeah.
But if anybody wants to help me, you can go to hbcuinstitute.org. Reverend Pinky, I thank you for your donation. Believe it or not, it's going a long way I have to serve my own subpoenas because of lack of funds, and I have people who are volunteering to help me. And there are legal expenses are a lot, you know, and I don't think that I deserve to go to jail for something I didn't do and for teaching young black kids how to think and how to stand up for themselves in a hostile white supremacist society. But now my children, I have five all under the age of 14, they're suffering. You know, this will probably be the first Christmas that we probably don't have much. And, you know, it's just been difficult, you know, for me and my wife and my children. It's been extremely lonely, very depressing, but I thank God that I'm not in prison. And
amen.
Listening,
hey, Professor, let me say this to you. I want people out there to know that you definitely have my support. And if it was any way that I could get down there, even have some kind of rally or something that we can do to get some funds to you, I would be glad to try to figure out a way to do it. But I would like people who listen to this show, we got two people here who actually need our help. We have one of the largest listening audience probably on Blog Talk Radio or in their history. And this goes all over the world. It's not just here in the United States. So if you're listening, we're asking you to please send a few dollars, send something, and tell them where they can send the money to.
Yes, they can send it to HBCUinstitute.org, or they can email me if they want to send a check to Jahi Issa 65. That's Jahiissa 65 at gmail.com or HBCUinstitute.org, where you can go onto my PayPal and make a donation.
And one of the things I want to say, Professor, we're going to send you a few more dollars just to help you a little bit. And I'm hoping that my listeners who are out there right now could please send a few dollars. If you can't be on the front line, at least you can send a few dollars. And on that note, you got about 90 seconds to say whatever you want.
Yeah, I just want to say this on the issue of the lynchings. Last Saturday, I was at a regional NAACP meeting in Delaware where all the state elective officials were there, NAACP. We also had the regional director who was over five states for the NAACP. I started bringing up this issue of lynching, in which all the people in Delaware knew about, all of the NAACP executives in Delaware. When I told this to Mr. David Bean, who's the regional director right under Ben Jealous, I told him about this. He literally got on the phone. I'm assuming he talked to Ben Jealous. Ben Jealous told him this is the vice president's state. He got the hell up out of there. He ran off. He promised to call me. He never called. I called him seven times. He never returned any of my calls after he promised. The NAACP in the past fought against lynchings. Now they're not doing anything about anything. And so I think you're right in your course of action against the NAACP.
Absolutely. But listen, I want you to hang on. Maybe at the end of the show, I'm going to give you a few more minutes. I'm going to have to go to my next guest. I got Ralph Pointer, Belinda Brown, and I'm going to bring on Denise Johnson at this time. And I'm going to see can make sure that you have something to say and tell them where they can send the money to. On this note, Denise Johnson, are you there?
Yes, Reverend Pinckney. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, Reverend Pinckney.
How are you doing today, Denise?
I'm blessed. I'm better than blessed, in spite of.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You're still standing tall. That's the beauty of this thing. Listen, I got some folks on the line who might be able to help you with something else that we're trying to do here in reference to you. Why don't you tell them your story?
Okay. On November 22nd, 2008, my son Gregory Johnson Jr. was a junior at San Jose State University. He was going to be a sports doctor. He was majoring in making A's and B's in kinesiology. On November 22nd, about 9:30, the Clear Lake Police Department came to my home and told me that my son was dead and that he had committed suicide. I called the coroner's office because I wanted to see his body. I didn't believe I thought they had the wrong child. and they told me that he had already been identified by his fraternity brothers, Mike Loris in Sigma Chi and Adam Sherman and Keith Caldwell in Sigma Chi, that he had already been identified and that I could not see his body. It took me 13 days to see his body. Even when I went down there and requested to see his body, the coroner, investigator Petra Albright told me I could not view his body. When I got his body here, it took me 13 days to raise the money to get him here from the coroner's office to the funeral home here in Clear Lake. I went in with a camera with my husband and I. We had a camera and we had a camcorder, and we took a picture of the back of his head. My son had a 6-inch long crack on the back of his head. Now, they claimed my son hung himself with a 14-gauge extension cord. That's what the autopsy said, because the autopsy never mentioned the crack on the back of his head. But they claimed he hung himself. Well, my son had no marks, no ligature marks, no bruises on his neck, nothing that would indicate that he ever hung at all.
And tell us how tall he was and where he was found, where they said he hung himself at.
My son was 6'4" at that time, and they claim he hung himself from a sewage pipe in the basement of the fraternity house, which was 5'10" long. The boy that claimed, Mike Loris, who claimed he found him, said that he was in a seated position with his legs out in front of him and his butt 1/2 inch from the ground, which is impossible. It's impossible for somebody to hang themselves like that. And he had no indication that he had ever hung. If my son was over 210 pounds, because he was a personal trainer at Bally's. He was a prior weightlifter. And extension cord would have torn his neck up. They claim he hung like that for 1.5 hours with no marks. And a six inch crack on the back of his head, which was not mentioned in the autopsy. Since this has happened, I have not been able to get any information. I only got one pieced-in report from the campus police. The city police were there. They investigated. They refused to give me any report. The FBI investigated this. They refused to give me any report. Sandre Swanson, the assemblyman member of Oakland, California, in the California State Assembly, wrote then Jerry Brown. He was the district attorney, and he was requesting that this case be reopened because the facts just didn't add up with what they were saying with suicide. And he was ignored, virtually ignored. They told him that they weren't going to reopen anything. And I have a letter here that I'm looking at that Sandre Thornton sent in 2009. I have not been able to get any pictures. No, the only pictures that I had were the pictures that I took. The FBI later said that this was a matter of national security when I sent a FOIA in. And they claimed that this was a matter of national security, and they had other reasons also if it ever went to court, they wouldn't want to reveal the witness's name. Witness to a what? Witness to suicide? No, it was a murder. They murdered my son down there, and they lied about it, and they covered it up. It was a cover-up by the university, by the district attorney's office, by the San Jose City Police Department, the campus police. The university covered this up, just like they covered up in that Dover case, Mrs. Conley. I was listening to that on YouTube. Mrs. Conley, they murdered your child like down there, and they covered it up because they didn't want to have to pay you. And you can never be paid for a life, but someone has to stand up. Somebody's got to be held accountable for the murders of these children. Because you know what? If it can happen to mine, it can happen to yours.
And you know what? You are absolutely correct. And I tell you one thing, Ms. Johnson, we're going to do whatever we can. We got folks that's actually here in Detroit who actually want to hear more about your case, but we need folks out in San Jose and Oakland and Richmond and that area too who's going to be working real close with me. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be in L.A. February the 1st, and I'm hoping that, you know, maybe before that the month is out, I can get down there to see you, and then we can actually go deal with the university itself. So, but I'm proud of the work that you're doing also. I know Reverend Harris is working as hard as he can, but we're going to do whatever we can to make this thing a reality and get you some kind of closure here.
Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. I just want people to know that I am ready to appeal to the world court on this. You know, it just cannot be that in the United States of America, our children can be hung and killed in school and walking the streets. Black men are becoming extinct because this society has turned its back on our children. Well, if we turn our backs, then they have no hope whatsoever. No, we have to appeal to the world. The world always appeals to the United States because we're supposed to be free and just. Well, we're not getting justice here. We're not seeing justice. We're seeing secrecy and cover-up and lies and professors getting fired. This is ridiculous. We have to stand up and appeal to the world just like they appeal to us.
Yep, you're absolutely correct, Ms. Johnson. And look, we're going to do whatever we can to help. You got my word on that. And, you know, you got 30 seconds to say whatever you want. And I got to bring on Belinda Brown. You go right ahead.
If you want to find out more information, I have a website called StrangeFruit@SigmaPi.com, StrangeFruit@SigmaPi.com. And then I have a PayPal account because we do need money. We need lawyers. We need pathologists. We need somebody. And they may have to come from overseas because nobody so far has stepped forward for the truth. We need somebody to step forward and tell the truth in this case. I don't handle any of the money. It comes through Women in the Word Network handles that for me. And we're just trying to get any help from anywhere we can. Anybody that's willing to stand for the truth and justice, StrangeFruit@SigmaPi.com.
Ms. Johnson, thank you so much for telling your story. And those of you who are out there, I know there's a lot of people out there who can help. I'm asking you to help. Please help these people because we need as much help as we can. If you can't be on the front line, at least you can be in the background, at least contributing in some kind of way. Ms. Johnson, I got to let you go now, but if you want to stay on and talk at the end, we can do that also.
Thank you, Reverend.
Right now I'm going to bring on Belinda Brown, and then it'll be followed by Ralph Pointer in that order. Belinda Brown, are you there?
Yes, Pastor Pinckney. Wow, I am here. This is a great show that you're having today. It's, listening to everybody's stories because truly there are so many stories to be told. In the case of the victors, I wanted to let you know that I had a chance to go and visit the little town that he lived in, him and his wife is from. It's St. John the Baptist Parish. It's called Reserves, Louisiana. I went there on yesterday, me and my husband, Pastor Pinckney, and I'm here to tell you it's really sad that the people there are so oppressed. I had a chance to interview his mother. His mother told me quite a bit of history about that little town. Talked about, you know, how difficult it is there for any black businesses that want to, you know, do any kind of, you know, business, commercial business or do any type of storefront business there. It's almost like the people there have been so oppressed for so long, Pastor Pinckney. They need somebody like you to go down there and organize them and awaken them to the fact that, you know, what happened to the victors could happen to anybody there in that town. You know, we found out that, you know, I'm hoping that the victors are still listening, that they get a chance to respond to, you know, by them being developers there in that little city. You know, they were going to do a paradigm shift and bring about a movement that would literally allow people to become self-sufficient business owners, you know, come out of poverty and begin to build their own economic machine. And that was a total threat to the people, the so-called powers that be that have drawn lines and redistrict the area and zone a residential property to commercial property so that they can, you know, make the wealth off the people. And what the victors were going to do, Pastor Pinckney, that, you know, that would literally be in so much competition that would probably take 80% of the wealth away from the powers that be and create their own little economic community where, you know, that the, which is probably like maybe 99% minority, that they would be have their own tax base and everything, build their own schools, banks, or whatever. So, you know, this was a total threat to them. They don't want to see a race, a black race, especially black people, become self-sufficient. And this was their whole underlining mind-grabbing. I mean, you know, when the victors say that their case was totally dismissed, and then they come back, and they charged them with the same charges, Pastor Pinckney, even after there was no, you know, case to prove. This is the kind of thing that when you look at how detrimental this whole thing could be, that they would use the law to stop, to shut down these people. You know, when they tried to silence you there in Benton Harbor, Michigan, they came after you with everything they had. They had to concoct, fabricate, make up all kinds of lies and stuff against you because they knew that you were bringing light to the people. You were lifting that oppression off of people. You had people unified and organizing people and speaking the truth to people to come out of that rut that they was in and stand up and fight for what was right and fight for their justice and fight for their civil rights. And Pastor Pinckney, when you begin to do that to the people, you know, it became a threat to them because they knew that they would no longer have control over those people and they cannot do whatever they wanted. So they had to stop you, and that's the reason why you went through what you did. But thank God, because now look at you now. Look at what's happening. You know, you're taking this movement across the country. You know, here in Louisiana, the people here, Pastor Pinckney, I'm telling you, your voice rings down here. Your name rings, and everybody need to know about what will happen when people stand up and unite, and people stand up and decide that they're going to fight back against any kind of injustice. We can make this happen. We can change the whole world. Pastor Pinckney, all we have to do is unite and fight back.
That's right, and you said the right word, fight back and unite. That's something that we don't do. Listen, Belinda, you got about 30 seconds. Say whatever you want. I got to bring on Ralph Point.
You know, I want to know if Mr. Taylor is out there because, see, I'm pretty sure that there's other little towns like Reserve. You know, here in the parish that I live in, you know, these people do whatever they want because the people will not fight back. They won't even speak up. They can know what's wrong, and they won't say nothing about it. You know, just like the conviction rate here is 99.9%. People go to jail for any and every little thing. It don't matter. It don't even have to be nothing. They're locking them up because they get paid for it, Pastor Pinckney. Prison and jail is big money now. So whatever they can convict somebody on, or whatever, you know, they can make up something just so that they can put them in the jails here. That's the reason why when you see the victims saying that they've been sitting in jail all this time, almost 5 years, and haven't been convicted of anything. We have stories where people have sat in jail 7 years. 7 years, Pastor Pinckney, and have not been convicted of a crime, but they still sitting in jail. Something is wrong. Something is seriously wrong.
All right, Belinda, listen, well, I want you to stay in there. We're going to see, can we get, at the end of the show, we get everybody a chance to say something. And so just hang in there. God is with us, and we're going to do all we can to help the victors. That's a promise, not a say-so. I got to move on. Ralph Point, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney.
I want to apologize for taking so long.
No. You never apologize for anything, because you are doing the right thing. And you do not apologize for the right thing. Your program is bringing us to a realization of doing something. First, understand the problem. And you are bringing out the problem that other media does not talk about. And here we are, Thanksgiving period. Giving thanks for the abundance of the land. But we must recognize, we as people of color, we as indigenous people, we are people whose land has been stolen, people who have been oppressed constantly ever since Europe met Africa, must understand that we cannot wait until it happens to us personally to take a stand. We must stand, and I'm thinking of Ward Churchill, the professor who is the wrote the Bible of COINTELPRO of America, Professor Ward Churchill, who, as he says when he stands to speak, my family, and he's talking of all oppressed people. And I think of honored professor, international speaker, and media personnel, Ralph Schoenman, when he says brothers and sisters. And Ralph Schoenman, who was the secretary of Bertrand Russell, looked that up, the outstanding humanitarian of our period who talked about inhumanities of that have been foisted upon the world by this industrial European Union. It was not the European Union. It was not NATO. It was before that, when they conquered the world, the sun never set on the British Empire. What did that mean? They enslaved the world from sunset to sunrise. And here we are today, thinking of Ward Churchill, who says, my family, Ralph Schoenman, who says, brothers and sisters, and Reverend Pinckney, who says, join me now in the struggle against oppression. And oppression does not happen only when it happens to you personally. And today I'm thinking of the Haitian people of New York City who have just come through and are still involved in the most outrageous oppression of the Europeans and the Americans against the people of Haiti. Instead of Thanksgiving, they went to the Cape and they asked me to come speak on the oppression of the indigenous people here. What does that mean? That means all of us who are oppressed, all of us who are in the path of the oppressors, must make a stand. And you, Reverend Pinckney, are teaching us how to make a stand. Your struggle, our struggle that is headed by you against Whirlpool, is one of the most significant movements of our time. That we as people as oppressed people of America, have been taught to use our resources against those who oppress us. I will not support those who oppress me. Do not purchase anything from Whirlpool to bring them to a standstill. And I say to everyone listening, do not purchase anything from anyone who would bring us to a standstill, who would oppress us. And I go further. Do not support anyone or anything that does not support us. And we must support all of those who support us. And I'm thinking of Reverend Pinckney. First of all, he's out there. He's putting himself out there to say, I am on your side, and I am working for you. We must work for Reverend Pinckney, and as I'm sure Mary Neal is going to tell us how we can do that. You do not hear of these situations in the major media. And I was thinking of what 2 weeks ago, the young woman who spoke on the program, and I'm getting emotional now, forgive me. I'm getting emotional now. She spoke of what was happening and with our environment. What was happening with the air we breathe? What was happening with the water we drink? What is happening with the finances? We know what's happening. They're being taken from us. They're being used against us. What must we do? And as a philosopher once said, getting an idea is like sitting on a pin. It makes you do something. You do not have the idea if you do not do something. Reverend Pinckney is talking about NAACP. That, my friends, is only one of the organizations that we support that does not support us. I'm thinking, I'm sitting in the North Country in New York City, south of Montreal, in New York State, where there is no fast internet. What was one of the organizations who opposed fast internet for the poor people or for the black and poor communities in the United States? The Urban League. We supported the Urban League. We are the Urban League, and the Urban League is working against us. And when they were confronted with this issue, their answer was, well, we were playing the devil's advocate. The answer is, do not support the Urban League. Do not support the NAACP. Do not support any organization that does not support you. And here, we as black people consider ourselves as educated, liberated, understanding. We support the Democratic Party. This is term two of Mr. Obama, and I tell you, I did not vote for Mr. Obama one. I did not vote for Mr. Obama two. But those of you who did, now it is time for you to say, do something, Mr. Obama. Not for me, not for you, but the people who supported him. And when Mr. Obama first went to the Black Caucus, it was headed by John Conyers. And when Mr. Conyers said, well, Mr. Obama, you are going to run for president and you come to the Black Caucus for support, why should we support you when you never supported our issues? And Mr. Obama's answer was, I did not want to be tainted by the civil rights movement. And all Fannie Lou Hamer wanted to do was to vote. And he didn't want to be tainted by that movement that made it possible for him to be president. It is time for you now to call on the Democratic Party and the president to deal with foreclosures and our problems. But if you can't do that, support Reverend Pinckney, who is doing that. Support those who support you. And I hear the young lady talk about lawyers. Well, we have a lawyer who supported us, who supported political prisoners, who supported those people who supported us. The now incarcerated Lynn Stewart, because she supported, no, she did not support. She defended in court without bias. Not the way the government wanted her to support, but she proved that the blind sheikh Omar Abdelrahman was not guilty of anything, but our government was guilty of fraud. Fraudulent prosecutions against people who fought against the dictatorship of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, the dictator who was overthrown and is in jail now in Egypt, and Lynn Stewart has been proven correct after 5 short years. The judgment of history has proven her right. The people of Egypt wanted to get rid of the dictatorship Hosni Mubarak. Morsi, the president of Egypt, is now calling for the release of the blind sheikh back to Egypt. What does that say for us? That says for us, if we support those who support us, we will be in our homes. And as the young lady was talking before, Vanessa, about what to do about foreclosures, I remember in the 60s when we had the fight of integration, when they put black people and Latino people in the Lower East Side in New York out of their apartments, we put them back in at night. We had crowds, organized people, to tear their doors down and put people back in the day they put them out. And if we can organize that on every issue, every complaint that's brought to Reverend Pinckney is an opportunity to organize. Call it what you want. I remember in the 30s, it was the communists who put people back in houses who were being thrown out. Let us imitate those people who support the people and put our people back in the homes without going to court. Let the courts take them out again. Put people back in homes. Turn electric on. Support organizations that feed. Because when we talk about Katrina, Katrina could happen in any moment. It happened in New York recently. And what happened? We have neighborhoods called Red Hook, Coney Island, etc., where black people live, where there is not much help. Why? We are not organized. We do not force the people we support to support us. And this is what we get. Brothers and sisters, family, all of those oppressed people who are looking for justice, support Reverend Pinckney, who has stood up for justice, has proven who he is, and oppose everyone he opposes. Let us show who we are. Let us be the court of final appeal. Here we are in the Christmas season. Keep your pennies in your pocket. No $350 sneakers. Nothing that is not involved with food or housing should be spent in the black community. I tell you, I do not. If it is not housing and food, there's no dollar going out of this gentleman's pocket, because I support boycott, boycott, boycott. Burn, baby, burn. Burn your ID in any organization, any union, any association, Urban League, NAACP, Democratic Party, whatever party you are a part of, must support what you support or you don't support them. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. And remember, our supporter, Lynn Stewart, all of you listening can look that up, and I'm not going to go into it, Lynne Stewart, Stewart, .org, and you will see the wonderful woman who has supported justice, which is our movement, our children, our history, our future. Lynn Stewart, Reverend Pinckney, remember that support. Thank you, Reverend.
And thank you, Ralph Pointer. Hey, I really appreciate you. Tell Lynn Stewart, the people attorney, that I love her, and tell her we're going to continue to fight for her.
Thank you.
All right, then. 7940, you're on the air. Go right ahead. Hello? 7940. Okay, let's move on. Mary?
What's
Mary
right?
Neal, are you there?
I am here, Reverend Pinckney, and I'm so glad to be here. I have learned so much about the situation that we're in. It's worse than I thought. All of these people being lynched and being wrongfully prosecuted. But you know, Reverend Pinckney, I am the Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. The thing is that I find even among our people, there is less consideration for mentally ill people and the situation that they're in. When a young black man is lynched, is killed, the community usually goes into an uproar like they did when Trayvon Martin was killed. But the Bible says, my God says, my Lord says, such as you do unto the least of these, his brethren, you do also unto him. The least of these are not the young, healthy people that these people murder because of their race or because of their so-called economic class. The least of these are the people who are not functional mentally. He said when you go into the prisons, you go there and you visit the sick and naked. Well, if you go to the jail, sir, everybody there has on an orange jumpsuit except for the mentally ill. They're the naked in prison. They are kept naked in these solitary cells so that they won't hurt themselves. They don't belong there. They belong in hospitals, and most of them would do well in their communities if they were given medical treatment. But they are preserved untreated, sir. They are preserved untreated so that they can enrich the prison profiteers. They are deliberately deprived of hospitalization. Yes, the mentally ill were omitted from the new national health care plan. We have 1.25 million of them in prison right now, and that is exactly where they were intended to be. That's what they did to let them out of hospitals in the 70s and start the private prison industry. Yes, that is the beginning of the private prison industry, was omitting paying for Medicaid for the mental hospitals. So these people are set up to be the strong arm for the prison industrial complex, our least among us, our mentally ill people. I wrote on your show last year in Christmas time a lady who talked about both her sons who are mentally ill. One of them was supposed to be out of jail this year, but what they did is they thought of some reason to lengthen his sentence. Yes, the mentally ill, when they come up for parole, oftentimes they will stop giving them medicine near time to them. They do not care about the mentally ill. I heard Denise Johnson say, take it to the world court. I want you to know, sir, that I was recently added to be a writer at theworld.com, and they wrote about, they copied my article that I wrote about Matrice Richardson. She was a woman with emotional distress, a young woman who had just graduated from college with a 4.0 in California. She was arrested in the middle of the night. She was released in the middle of the night with no money, no car, and no clear mind. And then she came up dead. A year later, they found her bones in the desert. Was she really released in the middle of the night, or did the police simply keep her and rape her and kill her and sell her organs? I'm telling you, these are the things that happen to the mentally ill. The mentally ill black relatives and whites. My brother was secretly arrested and kept 18 days and murdered. And you see, everybody is concerned about the murders of young people like Trayvon Martin and young people like Gregory Johnson. But I tell you, the mentally ill are killed with regularity in this country. And, yes, I am taking it to the world court because this is dirty. This is evil. And this is what Nazi Germany did. They started by killing 300,000 mentally ill people. They started with the mentally ill. And it didn't matter whether they were Jewish or whether they were non-Jewish, even the so-called Aryan mentally ill people were murdered. So I have a spot now, a blog on the world.com, I think that's the name of it, and my article about Denise Johnson, I'm sorry, Matrice Richardson is there, article about another matter is also already there. So we are taking it to the world, and we are going to tell. And these people want to shut us down, sir. You know how they censor us. They put you in jail to censor you, Reverend Bacon. They do everything to censor me. But we are going to stand up and tell the world that there is no liberty and justice for all in the United States of America under Eric Holder, a black attorney general who, unfortunately, I hear is going to remain in that position for at least another year, which means another year when these people can kill blacks and kill Latinos. These police officers can kill people with no recourse. I read recently about a white gentleman who invited three employees to his home. He shot the black one, just point blank, pulled the gun and shot him. That was 2 weeks ago. They didn't arrest him yet. So now we are expanding our brutality. Not only can the police kill us and not go to jail, but just any white person with money or respect in the community can just pull out a gun and shoot a black person and not go to jail. This man did this 2 weeks ago. And our children, sir, we have a 10-year-old girl in Maine who is on trial for manslaughter as an adult. You know, only Europeans with means have the right to a childhood. Our children are charged as adults at the age of 10 years old. We are not forgetful of the fact that the youngest person who was ever executed was 14-year-old George Stiney in North Carolina. So our children are treated like adults in this system, no matter what age they are. She is 10 years old, and she's on trial for manslaughter as an adult. Sir, they take girls and boys, and they put them in jail, and they beat them, and they beat them, and they use them for the next 70 years as prison slaves. But, sir, the day is coming when the Lord God is going to rain down his terror on these people who have terrorized us for centuries. And you know what? He said for us to take a stand. And I'm so glad to be with you, sir, because you're a man who's taking a stand. I'm so glad to join with these other people who are taking a stand. And I ask all of you to visit my blog, Dog Justice for the Mentally Ill. Yes, I have now started writing on theworld.com about the crimes against humanity that happen in the United States of America. God is expanding my voice, and I thank him for that, and we will put these issues on theworld.com. I will let the world know not to send a dime to the NAACP thinking that they will use it to help us. First thing, they need to stop sending money to the NAACP with the thought in mind that we are getting any benefit from it, and we have to tell them ourselves. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. My phone is giving out of battery, so I talk more, but I appreciate you, and I have listened to all the stories today, and I will put them before the world. Thank you, sir.
Listen, thank you also, and I would just like to say, you know, like this is just beginning, but the show is about to close out. I got to bring Vanessa back. Vanessa, are you there? Vanessa Flupner, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Listen, you can. You got about 45 seconds to say whatever you want.
Well, in closing, I just want to say that with the foreclosure crisis, it is a crisis, and it's more of a crisis for people of color. This was a created crisis. People didn't just stop paying their mortgage. The loans were created so that people would default. And at some point, we have got to get together collectively and stop this. Because when you start devastating people economically, taking away their housing, taking away their property rights, you're literally not just destroying that family, you're destroying the community, you're destroying the city, and ultimately you're destroying the whole population of the area. So I implore people to participate. Go on the websites I gave you, www.peoplebeforebanks.org or www.moratorium-mi.org. Get more information and get involved. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Vanessa, for being on the show. God bless you. Professor, go right ahead.
Okay, thank you, Reverend.
God bless you, too, now.
Okay.
Professor from Delaware, go right ahead.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Sister Ali, and I'm one of the targeted individuals. The powers that be is using psychotronic weaponry, which is called microwave energy, and it's no different
Ma'am.
Than them using it. Yes.
Go right ahead, Sister Ali. Go right ahead.
Okay. The name of the article is What is a Psychotronic Weaponry? And you can look this information up. This is military technology. What is a psychotronic weaponry? A psychotronic weaponry is military program that is technology that attacks and tortures the U.S. civilians from a distance using electromagnetic energy, microwave energy, and using it to attack and spy on the victims. The method to perform a secret electronic torture and operations are used with electromagnetic weapons, microwave weapons, non-lethal weapons, of extremely low-frequency weapons, directed energy weapons, acoustic weapons. Psychotronic weaponries are used as radio frequencies known as soft kill weapons. Some of these weapons are used as crowd control weaponries, and they are said to be less than lethal weapons when, in fact, they are very lethal. These weapons can be observed as a gigantic taser used by the satellite to harm U.S. civilians, as well as testing them out as synthetic telepathy technology on their victims as a government covert operation. Secret Laboratories of National Security Agency is working with DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Program Projects agencies, to use these radiation experiments on mass populations and control the people and murder them as a depopulation control. U.S. civilians' central nervous systems are attacked. Please be advised this technology would not be affected on the human body if human biochip implants were not placed secretly in the bloodstream. Methods being used on the victim to place these implants in the body is epidemic injections, drips of medication, water supply, food supply, and dentists are using it through injections of filling the tooth with the metal particles. This helps these government spies locate the victims easily. It is extremely painful, and this technology involves the use of electromagnetic waves of various frequencies to make a person tired, while others may cause confusion or memory loss. Many experiments have been conducted on the detrimental of effects of those of particular frequencies on animals. The results indicate that the visible electromagnetic energy signals are coming from cell phone towers and other microwave instruments that the government is physically placing out on the cell phone towers, the poles, and these devices are planted on different types of buildings that you can look up and see these towers. Synthetic telepathy is a subliminal system that attacks and alters the subconscious mind state using wireless microwave remote control technologies on targeted individuals. Many targeted are suffering from synthetic telepathy known as V2K or voice to skull, where the victims hear outside communication communicate with their mind uncontrollable against their will. Synthetic telepathy is used for conducting torture, train, and or experimentations against the people from suffering various synthetic telepathy techniques. Many victims are being misdiagnosed as being delusional, schizophrenic, paranoia when all the time they are tested on from the highest level of the government, who is responsible in carrying out such operations. There are many methods used to discredit the targeted individuals, and many victims' family are believing that their families have lost their mind, and all of this business is a big billion-dollar business coming from the global elite society and private contractors, which is, we call them as the powers that be. These covert operations are used on the government, United States Trade Patent Office, and one of the patent numbers is, you can look it up, 7629918. Raytheon and Lockheed Martin helped manufacture these electromagnetic weapons used to attack and torture many victims. The first phase is to harass, surveillance, start harassment and surveillance programs during the first phase of this government program on many victims, making them physically and mentally, and then the method is used are typical from the CIA and the FBI tactics like the COINTELPRO. They use echelon tempers, microchips, and implants, see through the walls and radars, and obtain information and use the neighbors to spy on people and co-conspirators to harass, discredit, and harm the individual. Victims lose their families, jobs, homes, and cars. Ultimate goal to destroy a person's life, which will isolate them from their families and friends. But isolation is needed to have the access to the person to contact many of the experiments on them. All privacies and the constitutional rights are thus stripped away. The second phase of this, of the assault of the directed energy weapons, after the victim has become isolated from everyone in the world, the victim now has feelings of regret, remorse, or loss, trauma, and are drained and broken emotionally and physically. During this time, many have been implanted with these microchips. Many began experiencing extreme pain to their head. Some, as I said, hear voices, and the pain is delivered to various other parts of the body. The pain is delivered by directed energy weapons. No one sees anyone around them causing the pain, and no one is touching them. It is an invisible energy force, along with drugs being administered by the scientists through either a dripping system, as I said, which has been inserted into an individual medication. And then the ultimate mission is to be able to use the mind entrainment, then it begins. Directed energy weapons, some of the weapons were known as non-lethal, and the list goes on, as I was saying. And then it also explains that they can use the technology as microwave pulse and radio frequencies of electromagnetic energy beams that can be used to induce considerable agitation and muscular activity to induce muscular weakness and lethargy from these weapons, known as ultra-high-frequency weaponry. And the whole ultimate goal is to create a psychological war affair with the human body from them having this advanced technology that they want to people to stop, to for people not to know about these things occur. And I just want to share with you that although we're fighting the powers of B, the powers of B is using this on United States citizens, and there are many of us, and we want to thank Reverend Pinckney for also taking on our calls. And we are giving you some support by putting something in the mail as a token of respect and honor that you are helping us, because many people think what we're talking about, people has lost their mind. But see, in order for we to get your help, we need you to do your homework. When we give you the information, and Reverend Pinckney allow us to put this information out here, go write it down, go do your own work. You will find out this is government human experimentation, but it's torture, and these are military weapons, and they use this in an Afghanistan war on many victims. So what we're saying to you is that please know what these technologies is, and also Prime Minister, Russian President Putin announced to the world about the psychotronic weaponry. Now, the problem is with the United States, they don't want other people to know that they will be involved in something. They want people to believe, like, communist countries, that so-called terrorists, when the United States is a terrorist threat for against their own citizens. They have gotten out of hand, out of control, and we must fight the powers that be on all levels, even including this. So I ask you again, I stress to you, go do your homework when we give you the name of these weapons and you'll find out. But a lot of you know them as crowd controls when they use this sound. And then it hits your, attacks your central nervous system, and then it makes you feel like you're on fire, and it'll make you nausea and all that. Well, see, they don't want you to know that they have this 30-year advanced technology they're testing on victims now, but they don't want to bring it out because they want to use it as a weapon on the mind. So they don't really need to physically kill you. They can torture you with these electromagnetic beams, sending this stuff in your house. That's right along with the spying, and they used the converter boxes from the televisions and changed it to the digital, from the analog to the digital.
Ms. Ali,
thank you. You'll
get a chance to talk more about that next week. We almost got to end the show. I got to bring on Professor so he can tell us a little bit. So just bear with us and just be with us, and we'll talk some more about it. Professor,
okay.
Go right ahead.
Thank you.
Professor from Delaware. Okay. Melinda Brown, go right ahead.
Yes, Pastor Pickney, I hope the victors are still on listening.
I'm going to go to them right now, too.
Okay. All right. You can go ahead and go to them and give them another chance to say what they need help with. I'm going to try my best to make it there to be in court with them tomorrow. Tell them to announce the time that they're going to be in court, too, as well.
They will do. All right, Belinda Brown.
Okay.
The victors, go right ahead. The victors.
Dr. Issa.
All right, go right ahead. You got about 3 minutes to say whatever you want.
Oh, you saying Dr. Issa or who?
Dr. Issa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, well, go ahead, Dr. Issa, go ahead.
No, I just want to thank you for being you and standing up and, more importantly, being a man. We don't have too many courageous black men standing up in this country, and it's important that people like you continue doing what you're doing. I just want to say that we need to organize. We need to have a national organization that's going to address the issues that are confronted us, and so that we can address it in a way that when we go to the powers that be, that they know that they're dealing with a people who are serious about being human beings. And so that's the only thing I'd like to add, and thank you for everything, Reverend Pink.
And listen, we're going to see what we can do for you also. We're going to make sure we stay focused and get something done for you. But also, you said the right word, we need to organize. We need to show the people what we're capable of doing, and we should do it nationally. You see what I'm saying? But it's hard to do it locally first because we got so many infiltrators. But we just have to fight. Hey, I believe if you're not with me, that means you're against me. And if you get in my way, I'm going to run you right over. That's how I feel. So don't get in my way. That's what I'm telling people out there because they know me. I don't take no prisoners because you got to feed them. And I'm willing to shoot the wounded because I don't want to carry them. So that's how I look at it. So we just taking this thing one step at a time. And listen, I hate to tell you this, but we have just ran out of time. We have no more time, and I want to thank everybody for coming on. But listen, I want people to get out there and do what you have to do. We now have 2,729 cars, NAACP cars that have been burned, 2,729. We're well on our way. We're well on our way. We can get 50, 60, 70, 75 to 100 cars every Sunday or during the week. I'm more than happy. But remember, don't support people who don't support you. And that's the biggest thing. On that note, I got to say good night to everybody. Good night, all.